as we move on to this rebuild and recovery phase, it is truly an incredible opportunity to shift culture. We have the opportunity to be more mindful and pay attention to creating an environment where we can all support one another, because we can't go back to the way that things were. And I think that's evident in many aspects of our lives. We just cannot go back to continuing on.
This is Meaningful Medicine. In a challenging and unpredictable world with high burnout rates, this is a podcast where incredible individuals share their most meaningful patient experiences and focus on those moments of positivity and joy that sparked their love of healthcare and changed the way they practice medicine.
Hi, I'm Nicole Hohenstein, and I'm an emergency medicine resident at UCSF.
Hi, I'm Shiva Kayambashi. I'm a doctor and professor of family and community medicine at UCSF.
We're the co-hosts of Meaningful Medicine. We created this podcast to highlight stories of healthcare professionals who have found a sense of meaning, resilience, and joy in their work.
Hi, Nicole. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Shiva?
I'm also doing well. I'm truly excited to have our guest today and have this time to talk with her.
In our last episode, we met with Dr. Larissa Thomas, and we discussed burnout and different strategies for systemic and cultural change to promote wellness and decrease burnout in the workplace. This week, we are going to be discussing race and burnout in medicine. We will be also discussing recovery after burnout in medicine, which we didn't get a chance to talk about last episode. And in a 2018 article that came out in the Journal of Graduate Medical Education, the researchers interviewed second and third year internal medicine residents, as well as residents who had just graduated. And they investigated the root cause of their burnout in medicine, as well as areas that promoted recovery from burnout. The authors found that circumstantial burnout was caused by self-limited circumstances and environmental triggers. And recovery from this type of burnout arose from 1, resolving workplace challenges, and 2, nurturing personal lives, and finally, taking time off. In contrast, there is this other type of burnout called existential burnout, which stemmed from a loss of meaning in medicine and uncertain professional role. Recovery from this type of burnout was promoted by 1, recognizing burnout and feeling validated, 2, connecting with patients and colleagues, 3, finding meaning in medicine, and 4, redefining a professional identity and role.
Nicole, I really appreciate your sharing. Sometimes we talk about burnout in a just very casual way with one another, with friends, with family. Like we just say, I'm burnt out. And what we mean by that is I'm just exhausted. And the answer to that really is you need some time off. You need a break. That really can work when we speak about it in a very general, casual way. But I think when we're talking about burnout, we're talking about a more formal meaning of it. And that is the 3 elements where there's this emotional and physical exhaustion. There is that. And then another component is that you're so exhausted emotionally and physically that you just disconnect. And then there's this last layer, which feels even deeper. And I think it is that existential layer, which is that I've lost my sense of meaning. I've lost my sense of purpose. I don't even think it matters. I'm not sure I even care. I'm not sure anyone cares. You know, that's really deep. And that can be just even more painful because the others feel like they can be solved by some time off and extra support, just like you mentioned from the article. But the deeper issues, the existential part, I think is really more difficult to reconcile and to correct. You know, you can't just prescribe a weekend off for that.
I'm so excited to get to introduce Dr. Star Knight. She received her MD from the Medical College of Wisconsin, completed her residency in emergency medicine at Highland Hospital in Alameda County, and completed her emergency ultrasound fellowship at UCSF. Dr. Knight is the inaugural director of faculty experience at UCSF at Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital. She's also the associate chair of the Department of Emergency Medicine, director of diversity and inclusion, as well as the UCSF Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Ambassador and Trainer, and finally, a UCSF Faculty Equity Advisor. Dr. Knight was a class of 2016 John A. Watson Scholar and has received numerous awards, including the 2022 UCSF Academy Senate Distinction in Mentoring Award and the 2020 UCSF Academy of Medical Educators Excellence in Teaching Award. Dr. Knight is committed to the community and the mentorship of underrepresented learners and by widening the educational pathway at various stages of training. Welcome, Dr. Knight.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Knight. We're excited to have you, and we really are excited to discuss this topic with you. We always like to ask each of our guests at the beginning of each episode if you could, in short, share a meaningful moment that came early in your training or anywhere in your process that was particularly a formative or defining experience.
The story that I'm going to share, it takes place over a number of years, and it starts early in my training. I remember being a first or second year resident, going in to see an older African-American woman. Upon entering the room, she tells me how much she appreciates having me as her doctor, having a Black doctor and a Black female doctor. And she goes on to tell me this is the first time that this has happened in her lifetime, which already is super impactful because this woman is 60, 70 years old, and she's got an entire lifetime with multiple interactions with the healthcare system and has never been taken care of by someone who shares this part of her identity with her. And her granddaughter is in the room. Her granddaughter at that time was a preteen, I believe. She goes on to express a strong interest in medicine, saying that she wants to be a doctor, but she has a lot of doubt in her mind about how difficult it must be to be a doctor, how long it must take to be a doctor. I went on to reassure her that, you know, if I could do it, she could do it. I said, look at me, I'm not old. I'm not beaten down. I'm not run down. You know, you can do this. It is very possible. So then fast forward 5 or 6 years later, I'm now a fellow or junior faculty, and I'm at a mentoring event for our local NMA chapter. Their group is called the Physician Medical Forum, and they do a lot of different outreach events throughout the Bay Area, in particular in the East Bay. And this was a mentoring event where there were hundreds of high school students and hundreds of undergraduate students. And I spoke on a panel, and I'm walking away, and there are a group of young African-American ladies who are either in high school or in undergrad talking to me about that experience. And one woman goes, hey, you may not remember me, but I never forgot what you told me. You took care of my grandmother, and you told me that I could do this. Now, she goes on to tell me that she's entering into college and she plans on being pre-med. And we talk about that path. I tell her to enjoy college. Don't forget to have fun. Enjoy that experience. So then fast forward to 2019, I'm at this event called BNGAP. It stands for Building the Next Generation of Academic Physicians. And they essentially support underrepresented medical students and residents and trying to promote careers in academic medicine for these learners. So I'm co-leading a workshop with Dr. Michelle Guy. And after the workshop, a woman comes up to me and she goes, you may not remember me, but you took care of my grandmother. We saw each other a few years ago. I'm now a medical student here at UC Davis, and I'll be applying into psychiatry. And we hugged, and it was so meaningful. I think this moment, these stories and these moments really highlight how much representation matters and how small points of contact can have a lasting impact on someone's life. And you may think of it as just a small interaction, but people really hold on to those moments and they can really spark something in others. And so it really just highlighted the impact of representation. And, you know, people say, if you can see it, you can be it. And I really believe that.
Wow, what an impactful mentorship experience. And to have those points that you keep running into each other and you get to see her journey along the way. Thank you so much for sharing. Dr. Knight, you recently published a piece in Emergency Medicine News titled Diversity Matters, Wellness, Burnout, and Recovery Through a DEI Lens. For our listeners, can you go through the major findings of your article and can you describe how you became passionate about this topic?
So the topic is personal to me. It resonates with me. It's relational. I know many of my colleagues and my friends are experiencing this. I think that faculty experience and well-being work blends my passions and my commitment to DEI and well-being. And, you know, I truly believe when we are able to show up as our authentic selves, we are better doctors, better providers, we're better educators, researchers, colleagues. And that lends itself to us being better in our personal lives, better spouses, better partners, parents, and family members. And so It's definitely personal for me. I start the article off by just acknowledging that this is a really challenging time to be in medicine right now. I acknowledge that we were already at crisis level as it relates to burnout before the pandemic. And I recognize how much the pandemic has significantly accelerated burnout. There's a quote in the article from the US Surgeon General who describes the pandemic as this uniquely traumatic experience for healthcare workers. This article is tailored to emergency physicians. And one of the things that I mention is that although we get trained on disaster preparedness and rapid response, there is no readiness training for the emotional, the psychological, and the physical toil that a daily global disaster takes over the course of almost 3 years. We don't have training on that. And, you know, I acknowledge that we all stepped up to support our communities early on. We risked our own lives, especially before vaccines were available, especially before we had a real foundational knowledge of what COVID was. We witnessed numerous patients die, our own family and friends, our own colleagues die. And now we're almost 3 years later, we're over 1 million lives lost. We're dealing with nursing shortages. We're in this great resignation and just, you know, now headed into a recession as we talk here. What a challenging time this is. And I think honestly acknowledging that is huge in itself. Because I think in medicine, we compartmentalize so well. We put our heads down, we just keep going, and taking a moment to sit back and realize and really process the layers and the complexities of what we just experienced is important. And as emergency physicians, I'm not sure that we always take that time. I go on to talk about how all of us have been impacted by this, but there is definitely a disproportionate impact on those of us that are from the BIPOC community and female-identified providers. And in particular, those of us from the BIPOC community, as healthcare workers, we had higher rates of COVID, and unfortunately, we had one of the largest percentages of frontline healthcare worker deaths related to COVID. Part of that relates to the fact that we are overrepresented in certain roles in medicine. We're not overrepresented as physicians or nurses or nurse practitioners or APPs. We're overrepresented as nursing home workers, as personal care workers, as healthcare aides. Many of those roles, people had inadequate PPE and were frontline, face to face with a lot of COVID patients. I go on also to talk about how our female-identified providers were disproportionately impacted, how many of our female-bodied people in this country, we represent caretakers, the caretakers of this nation. And with school closures and skilled nursing facility closures, how that impacted us and still having to go into an environment every day to risk our lives and to put ourselves at risk. There's multiple levels of impact there for our female-identified providers. And then the article kind of shifts away from COVID to recognize that COVID was not the only crisis that impacted our well-being. We entered in on a reckoning of racism, in particular anti-Black racism, sparked by the murders of many unarmed Black Americans due to police officer violence, which sparked what many are calling the largest global civil rights movement of our time. And layered on top of that are the layers of increase in hate crimes, in particular anti-Asian hate crimes, which we saw a lot of here in San Francisco, anti-Semitic hate crimes, and then an additional layer of this unfortunate increase of mass shootings and how that affects us, and particularly affects those of us that belong to these target groups, having to go into work taking care of victims of this of these violent crimes, wondering what that means for us when we leave work. How safe are we walking to our cars, doing our daily activities with these types of events on the rise? Although those are all very heavy things, I do end that article with a hopeful outlook. As we move on to this rebuild and recovery phase, it is truly an incredible opportunity to shift culture. We have the opportunity to be more mindful and pay attention to creating an environment where we can all support one another. Because we can't go back to the way that things were. And I think that's evident in many aspects of our lives. We just cannot go back to continuing on.
wondering, before we go on to sharing about recovery from burnout and moving forward, could you just share in your opinion, Dr. Knight, what you feel are the main causes of burnout for healthcare workers of color?
I think for those of us that are healthcare workers of color, we're impacted by all of the major factors of burnout that everyone else is dealing with. So that includes your workload exceeding your capacity, feeling under-resourced to deliver the care at a high level, or feeling under-resourced to provide the type of care that you'd like to, feeling undervalued at work, or being in a work environment where your values are not in alignment with your institution or your hospital or your colleagues in your department or your medical group. So those are all factors that are at the foundation of burnout for everyone. And additional factors for those of us that are from underrepresented backgrounds include, number one would be feeling isolated. Being a person of color, you notice as you navigate higher levels of education, there are less and less people who look like you. I think especially here at UCSF, it's wonderful to know that we have increased BIPOC representation amongst our medical students and our trainees, our residents. However, we haven't really seen the similar increase in our faculty. And our faculty are who, you know, the folks that are supporting the education of these learners. And so what ends up happening is those of us that are faculty that are underrepresented, we get tapped and we genuinely want to mentor these learners. We see ourselves in these learners. We want to provide any support that we can to impact their experience positively. But many times that time isn't compensated. The time and those efforts aren't valued equally as research or as your clinical work might be. That really kind of plays into that burnout of your values not being in alignment and of the value of the work that you see that you're doing every day. In addition, there's just the realities of being from an underrepresented background and living in this country that education and social class just won't impact. If I can speak for myself, the fear that I have about myself, my own safety, my family and my friends' safety as it relates to their interactions with law enforcement. You know, these are realities that I face every day. I keep one of my hospital badges in my car every day in case I get pulled over by the police. That impacts our well-being on a daily basis. Those don't go away for us. And you can fill in that blank. I mentioned I'm a Black American, so I'm mentioning the police as we experience it in the Black community, but you can fill in that blank with immigration officer, ICE, and what that means for those of us that have to experience interactions with those types of figures on a regular basis. I think the three layers, I would say, of burnout, just kind of round this out, for healthcare workers of color, there's the baseline level of burnout that we all experience. There's the, what people call the minority tax, but the areas in which we're being tapped to support the learners and other healthcare workers of color to create community that are super impactful for our well-being, but may not be supported or valued. And then there are the realities of living in this society as a person of color, and when that gets heavy and strained. And so the backpack that we carry is definitely a bit heavier.
Thank you so much for sharing that. You mentioned kind of we are our greatest selves when we're able to be our authentic selves. And it's sad that there is this chronic stress of when you are your authentic self, you're going to somehow find resistance and get in trouble or maybe lose your life for being that authentic self. And that just is another layer. Trainees and physicians of color are often the ones championing these initiatives to increase diversity, equity, and inclusion in their programs and at their workplace. I can imagine that this work can sometimes feel like a burden and can lead to burnout. Can you discuss how you have maintained your stamina and your own mental health and wellness while continuing to be an activist and leader in doing this important work?
I've definitely experienced many periods of burnout, in particular over the course of the last 2.5 years. I'd say starting in 2020 with a lot of support for myself, for trainees, junior faculty, family, and friends around how heavily we were confronted with anti-Black racism. And I'm sure if there are other Black people listening to this call, people can definitely recall getting random phone calls from people who you haven't talked to in years just saying, I didn't know it was this bad, you know? And so there was just an overwhelmingness to being Black in that time on many different levels. And, you know, I think that in addition, the work that I do, not even just DEI work, but also the work experience work, it's a difficult time to be doing faculty experience, faculty well-being at a time where we're all so low. This is definitely tougher than engaging in this work in 2017 or 2018, where we could have all maybe done a yoga retreat or done something that's a little more uplifting. And we're not digging ourselves out of a hole. But in this work, I'd say that I am reminded that this is not a sprint, that it is not a marathon, but it's more of a relay race. And that means that sometimes you're not going to be able to carry the torch. You need to take that time. I'm surrounded by a wonderful support team in all of the work that I do. And that means that the work doesn't start or end with just me. We support one another in the work that we do, and we support one another in taking time off and nurturing our personal lives. That's extremely important. As it relates to this work, like I mentioned, if you're the only one, if you're the only one doing DEI work, or you're the only one doing well-being work, I don't think it's sustainable at all. And the concepts and the commitments should really truly be embedded into the culture of your department, your institution, your hospital, your medical group. That's the only way to impact change. It can't be one person on a soapbox, always only doing the work. I think what's helped with my stamina, I mean, like I said, I take personal time off with my family. I take time to rest. I have a very supportive wife. Technically, we're newlyweds, so we've had a lot to celebrate this year. I have an extremely supportive group of friends that are my chosen family. I enjoy spending time in nature, so I take time to do that. I'm a burner. I go to Burning Man, and Burning Man just came back in full effect this year, 2022. That community and that experience always just rejuvenates me. It helps to restore my faith in humanity. Music is therapy for me. That's live music, going to sound baths. I, of course, exercise regularly to try to keep my energy up. Although this work is passion for me, it's passion work and it's personal work, I still try my best not to get too lost in my work. And so those are ways that I've helped to maintain stamina and try to combat my own burnout. And honestly, being able to recognize when I'm feeling low has been also crucial in prioritizing myself in those times.
I'm just going to share something that Nicole and I read in May of 2021. Prasad and some colleagues published an article in The Lancet that described the results of a survey that assessed stress during COVID-19 of over 20,000 healthcare workers across 42 organizations across the U.S. in the peak of the pandemic, May of 2020 and October of 2020. And the researchers found that stress scores and fear of exposure was statistically higher in Black and Latinx healthcare workers compared to white healthcare workers. The researchers also found that the odds of experiencing burnout were 40% lower when healthcare workers felt valued by their organizations. Dr. Knight, you worked in the emergency department throughout the pandemic. Based on your own experience, how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected frontline medical workers from racial and ethnic minority groups?
Some of the things, you know, I'd already mentioned around where some of us are as racial and ethnic minorities within the healthcare workforce, many of us being frontline. But I just also want to just take time to acknowledge that in addition to taking care of patients in direct patient care, there was a huge kind of public service, public health service role that a lot of us played to educating people in the community about COVID-19. And answering questions. And members of our community as people of color have historical reasons and continued reasons to not fully trust the healthcare system. I think that a lot of us got into public health service mode and went out into communities. So not only did we have the tax of what we were doing at work, which was extremely stressful and high stakes, but also going into the community, the work kind of didn't stop. Then you leave the hospital, people want to talk to people that look like them, people that they feel are part of their community and part of their cultural groups. And doing the community outreach, then you get home and it's your family and your friends that are like, what should we do now? How about this? How about that? And all of that within the context of some serious and real concerns around, can we trust this information? Were these studies that you're telling me are valid? Did they look at people like me? Did they look at people in our community? honestly combating misinformation at a level in which I think the medical system has not had to combat in my lifetime, for sure. And so there's that misinformation. There's real, very real concerns about trusting the healthcare system. And unfortunately, you know, the healthcare system has continued to, in many ways, leave some of these people and some of these communities behind. And so there's a lot of legwork to be made up. There's a lot of trust to be made up for. And it's work that we want to do. It's work that is meaningful to us, but it's also not work that is necessarily going to get counted for your promotion, for your, you know, for your bonus, for other things that are valued at work. And so all of that contributes to that high level of burnout that a lot of us experience in the healthcare workforce.
Dr. Knight, based on your research and your experience, do you have any recommendations of ways that we can combat burnout in our own workplace and in our own lives?
As much as there can be a focus on the individual, and I will name a few of those things that we can do as individuals as it relates to rest and recovery. We all know we should be sleeping well, eating well, and whatever that means for you, eating well, you know, doing some type of movement or exercise. And we can do our mindfulness practices, whether that's meditation or yoga or sound baths or being out in nature. And you can do all of those things as an individual, yet and still you can step right back into a toxic work environment and all of the positive effects of that can be negated. And so I would say the majority of in the work that I've been working on have been around creating systemic changes that shift organizational culture to improve workplace conditions. And I think that's where our focus should be around recovery and rebuilding. Actions to show the people that you work with that they are valued, that they belong, providing competitive wages, combating workplace bias and workplace discrimination. That means truly and heavily investing in DEI efforts, and not just one effort, but the maintenance of a robust DEI program. Having inclusive and family-friendly policies around childcare, around care for older individuals, around parental leave, and then building a culture that normalizes using those leaves. Having, you know, time to use sick leave, use family leave, take mental health breaks, providing high quality mental health services without stigma for taking the time that we need for our own mental health. I think that's key. And then having structures in place to measure and address this. That means having these positions, like was mentioned, I'm this inaugural director of faculty experience, but having positions around well-being and faculty experience, similar to how we elevate research, how we elevate education, how we elevate clinical care, this should be elevated equally on that same plane. These well-being officers and these experience officers should have support to utilize structures to measure burnout, measure the drivers of well-being that contribute to burnout. And a lot of the drivers of well-being, like some of the top drivers, are around our leadership structure, feeling supported by our leaders, having open dialogue with our leaders, having our leadership seek input on important decisions, having control over your own workload, how we're interacting with this electric medical record. All of these things are important as it relates to our own well-being. And so having the actual systemic support to do that, and having these well-being officers or experience officers report to leadership and develop action plans, have these continuous reassessments, I think are key as we move to this recovery phase. So those are my thoughts around how to do this. We can once again focus on the individual, but we really need to come together and make systemic changes.
And as we wrap up the podcast today, we're hoping that you could share some advice that you have for medical trainees that are at the beginning stages of their careers in medicine.
This is a very interesting time to be alive. This is a very interesting time to be a trainee. And society as a whole is in transition. Not one person was not affected by this pandemic. And we are all transitioning. And medicine is no different as an industry. And so, you know, I know that sometimes generational differences are met often with an eye roll or a sigh, but the reality is we can't go back to the way we used to do things. We can't go back to praising or bragging about how we walked uphill in both directions in the snow, or praising one another for how many hours we worked in a day or how many hours we worked in 1 week, or coming into work sick and hooking ourselves up to IVs in between patients. These are all things that people would do with pride, because we're so resilient as physicians and as medical providers. And I think that trainees play a huge role in this culture shift. And I'm hoping that trainees will continue to help work with their faculty to help propel change. I think that trainees will hopefully have to have just a little bit of patience with faculty. Many faculty, we didn't get any formal training on what burnout was, how to recognize it, let alone how to combat it. There was no roadmap for us during our medical training. There weren't discussions like this being had. And so there is definitely a learning curve, but I am very hopeful.
We will leave the field of medicine in better condition than when we found it and when we entered into the field of medicine.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It was so incredible, and I can't wait to share it with our listeners.
Thank you so much, Dr. Star Knight. We loved having you. We hope to have you back again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful to be here with you all.
Thank you for tuning in today
and allowing us to be one of your meaningful moments.
Please rate, review, and subscribe, and share with friends, family, and colleagues. Meaningful Medicine was produced by Shiva Kayambashi, Nicole Hohenstein, David Elkin, Nikki Elkin, Ahaley Chattopadhyay, and Leigh Kodama. Editing by Nicole Hohenstein, Nikki Elkin, and Leigh Kodama. Intro and closing by Daniel Wendling. On Meaningful Medicine, we are careful to ensure that all stories are compliant with healthcare privacy laws, and details may have been changed to ensure patient confidentiality. All views expressed are of the person speaking and not their employer.